Hello and welcome to the Bosun's Call Woodworking Podcast, episode 14. I am your host, James, the Bosun, and today we have for you table saws. Everything you never wanted to know about table saws. I'm joined by my wife, Esther, and of course, we will have a cool tool and a sailor term for you. Without further ado, let's get cracking. Hello, Esther.
Hello.
How are you?
I am very good.
Your sprouts are doing very good.
Yes, they are. They are on to the next phase.
We have our window greenhouse, which has exploded.
Yes.
And we are already transferring stuff into bigger stuff. So I need to hurry up on my spring woodworking projects, like planters and windowsill planter boxes and all of the plant things.
Yes.
Yes, very much so. All right, today we're going to be talking about the table saw, the workhorse, really, of any woodworking shop, I feel. There are certain instances, if you're starting out, where you can get away without having a table saw, but really, everybody wants a table saw.
You need one.
Or even, you know, if you don't want the full-size table saw, you could do a hybrid, which is... It's basically a job site saw, like a beefier job site saw on stilts. So it's got the height, but it doesn't have the closed up panel and the weight associated with it. It's kind of halfway in between. And then a job site saw is, you know, very small, very compact, designed to be mobile, typically has like a folding base that can kind of extend.
And there's something.
I mean, Festool makes a job site saw.
I bet they do.
So you can do some fancy stuff if all you have room for is a job site saw. But before we get into that, let's give them the sailor term.
Sailor term.
The sailor term is scuttlebutt. You heard me right. Scuttlebutt. So scuttlebutt is a very old term for sharing gossip around the water cooler or its equivalent.
Yep.
So it is basically... Yeah, that's what it is. It's the rumor mill. It's the gossip. That's the old sailor term for gossiping, especially gathering around something like the water cooler and sharing stories.
So, is there a specific scuttle or butt?
Yes, both of those things. So sailors would share gossip. The term comes from the equivalent of the ship's water cooler, which is a wooden barrel known as a scuttle.
Obviously.
With a hole drilled in it called a butt.
Yeah, totally.
Fun fact, if it's a metal barrel and the hole in the top is called a bunghole, and the wrench to like take the plug out of said bunghole is called a bung wrench.
Modern English has just devolved.
Still, no, that's a very, very old word for
it's
it.
It's a very, very old word, yeah. But really you can't use any words nowadays.
But anyway, the scuttle is the barrel and the butt is the hole at the top.
Perfect.
So sailor would stand around.
Literally sharing, the water cooler.
Sharing tales while getting a drink of water. Thus, it was called scuttlebutt.
Well, it's good.
So really,
I think... You can share that around the water cooler tomorrow.
Yeah, and you could just change it to like, hey, what's the scuttlebutt? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, it's like, hey, what's the hot, juicy rumor today? And that would totally be fine.
Hey. Shock your friends.
I like words, like old words for things. Like your favorite word is widdershins.
Yes, it is.
Which is the official word for anti-clockwise.
Yes, it is.
So now you know. And that's permanent. You can't unhear that. All right. And then we have a cool tool for you. And it is related to table saw stuff. And I highly recommend it. I have one of my own. By the way, just in case you were wondering, we have no sponsors. I am the sponsor of the show right now. So all the stuff I've purchased myself, just in case you're wondering. But if there is an exceptional product that I have tried or have or something like that, I have no bones about sharing that with you to help you sort through the flotsam and jetsam. That's what we should make next, you know, for a word, yeah. And get to the good stuff, the things that are actually good. So the cool tool today is a blade cleaner by MicroJig. It is a round container. You unscrew the lid And it has a circular scrunch pad and a kind of, it's a molded plastic, and it's got a little center bit that comes up out of the middle so you can center it. What it's designed for is cleaning your saw blades, so your circular mm-hmm. saw blades, any size, they'll fit. So the circular scrunch pad, you put the thing down there, it's got this really powerful magnetic handle. You snap that onto the blade once it's free, and you can put it in there. You'll fill it with whatever cleaning solution you prefer. Right now, I'm using Simple Green, which works just fine, and it cleans all the resin and whatever buildup that you have on your mm-hmm. blade to keep it nice and sharp and prevent from getting burning.
No burning.
As you're cutting anything, those scorch marks. And basically all you do is you put your blade in there, you let it soak for a little while, you give it a few spins with the magnetic handle to get that scrunch brush working, flip the blade over, do it on the other side, and you're good to go. You have a nice, clean, sharp blade again to use. It also has a little bit on the lid. It's got storage for stuff like little Dremel cleaning pads and a little scrunch brush and some other stuff, but it also has a little well for soaking and brushing router bits.
Oh.
So you can clean off all that resin and junk.
They do tend to work better when they're clean.
Yes, absolutely. If you're getting excessive burning with anything, it's probably because you have a dirty blade. You need to clean that dirty blade.
Much better than toothbrushes or whatnot.
But the nice thing about it is I used to use a resin cleaner, dissolver. Worked really, really well, but it kind of breaks it down and makes it, because it's kind of gunked on there. Mm-hmm. So you need something to kind of like a solvent or so of some kind to kind of break it up to get that off of there. And I was using that in just like the lid of a regular like 5-gallon bucket. Mm-hmm. And it kind of worked okay. But the thing is you couldn't reuse anything. The nice thing about this is once you have your solution in there, you can just leave it. You put the lid back on. It's got little clasps on it that close and lock it down, and then you can just, you know, store that somewhere, and then you have it ready. It just makes, you know, keeping your blades clean a lot easier. I will typically do it when I'm changing blades. I have a little blade storage thing that I made, and that's just really, really nice. Or if you're just getting a lot of excessive burning on some very fancy wood, you need to just take the time to just go clean it. So it's a very cool tool. I highly recommend it. It's only $99, so for a mere $100, you know, which could be a little steep, but I think it's well worth it. It'll last you. It should last you a lifetime.
And something you'll use very frequently. Yeah.
I would imagine the only thing you really have to replace is the round scrunch pad, which I would imagine. I don't know 100% for sure, but I would imagine that Microjig has for sale on their site.
Yes. All right. Table saws.
Table saws.
What kind of table saw do you have?
I have a hand-me-down. I bought it off of my dad, who upgraded. So I have...
Best way to buy tools.
So I got it on the cheap, and it actually has a lot of nostalgic value because it's what I learned on this saw, which is a very old... combination. It's not a full cabinet. It's a combination saw. So the bottom of the cabinet is kind of open. It's kind of skeletonized. And it's an old Delta. It is extremely loud. The thing sounds like a banshee whenever you fire it up, even when it's working properly. I would consider that a safety feature because you know when that thing's on.
It's true. Throughout the house, there is no doubt.
For a half a second, I was considering like trying to do an impression of the saw, but
do that to them.
It's awful.
Good ear protection is a must.
Yeah.
But it's a good saw.
Yeah, it's a very good saw. Oh gosh, I don't even know how many horsepower it is. I've never had any reason to be like, I need more horsepower. Like, it's always done just fine. So I think the motor's fine. A lot of older tools are typically over-engineered, so I think that's probably the case. I want to say it's like 5 horsepower, but I'm totally guessing. I looked it up once, but and I still have the manual and everything, but I've done so many things to that saw. Speaking of that, I guess we can talk. Well, we'll talk about the upgrades that I've done to it as we go through our list of table saw related items. So the we'll talk about the first part of the list that I assembled here is a lot of just in general table saw features, and in general table saws have improved over time. I will say one thing before we get started. The fence that came with this one was awful. It was so bad. It like not only was it bad and it was really hard to adjust, it didn't fill you with a lot of confidence, and it screeched when you like scraped metal on metal, like trying to move it. It was basically two steel pipes on either side of the cast iron bed, and then you had this, you know, another piece of steel and a very bad little, you know, metal arrow pointing at a sticker that was like almost illegible. And then you had to do the tap back and forth, but it was so not smooth, like tapping it. I mean, like you almost break out a rubber mallet to actually get it to move. And then all it would do is it just had a clamp, you know, like a little lever to, like most table saws do, but it, you know, just clamped from the other side, but it could still like move up and down and stuff. So it was not great. And I really got tired of it quickly and ended up replacing it. But we'll talk about that when we get to table saw fences. The saw itself is great. It's a belt driven. I've had to replace the belt before, which is not a bad thing, because then, you know, if anything's going to fail, that belt will. And then that's fairly inexpensive to replace. So
that is a normal thing to wear out on anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Rather than direct drive, because if you have something happen, there's no intermediary item that could take the stress of that and maybe break instead of breaking the motor.
In case it's not obvious, I know nothing about motors and engines.
The thing that makes it spin, and then there's a belt that attaches to the cuddy thingy.
Oh, I can do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. I mean, that's how I think about stuff.
All right. What are inserts?
So if you get a table saw, there'll be a cutout in the top of the cast iron top of where the blade sticks out. And that kind of oval shape typically will have, it'll come with a couple different inserts that sit in that gap and kind of close it up. And it'll be flush with the tabletop. And you usually get a couple. You'll get one of them that'll be just wide enough that the blade can tilt 45 degrees.
Okay.
And then back up to 90. And it'll typically only tilt one way. It'll typically tilt away from wherever your fence starts.
That makes sense.
And then you'll get a second one, which is much wider, and that's for your dado stack. And some of the newer table saws are coming with a zero clearance insert. And what that is that is just a full kerf. Full kerf, meaning 1/8 of an inch gap, like just enough for the blade to slip through.
Okay.
And all of those fulfill their own roles, right? So the dado stack, you know, you build it up if you're moving a lot of material, and you can keep adding those on 1/8 of an inch at a time until you have, you know, an inch worth you're taking out one go.
Okay.
If you're doing like tenoning or something, you're trying to do something like that where you're moving a lot of material. And then you have your less wide kind of standard one that goes in, and that also, it's a little bit thinner, but it will allow for the blade to tilt without, you know, cutting into anything. And then if you're just doing 90 degree cuts and you're doing like plywood, which has a really bad tendency for tear out, you want to support those fibers as they pass close to the blade so that the blade doesn't grab them and rip them out and make that nasty knurled edge or splintered edge. So for mine, I've had to make my own. It's not hard to do if you have a router table or a router. You can do some fancy stuff. You basically take one of your plates, you stick it to a piece of wood, and you use that as a router template. And then you do a couple other little cuts or whatever you need to make it sit flush. And then drill some screw holes and you're ready to go. And then you back your blade down all the way and very slowly raise it up and cut your full kerf line in it. So really, really, really important. So I know a lot of the newer saws are coming with a lot better options and features. And they will actually come with this. And essentially, if you're changing a blade, that plate is what comes out so you can gain access to the blade in order to change it. So it gives you a little bit more room so you can get in there, take the nut and bolts off, take the blade off, replace the blade, and then put the insert back in.
All right. Is there something special about on and off switches?
So newer saws are coming with big on and off switches. And the idea is it's like right by where you would be standing. And I have actually upgraded mine, which had just a really basic toggle switch. A lot of them will have the little safety tab you can pull out so that the switch is inoperable, so you couldn't accidentally turn it on.
Oh, yeah, that'd be bad.
If you wanted to, with that little toggle pulled out, or it's like a little key in some cases. That had broken on mine, so I installed just a regular, you know, like Apollo 13, you know, NASA switch in there. And that works just fine. But then I also have what I've done is that's like an additional safety. So I can turn that off as well. But I have another switch that's bigger that I've installed on the front rail. And it's got a big red panel for off. And I can just bump it with my knee if I have to.
That's good.
So if for whatever reason you need that saw off now, it's a really good idea to have an on and off switch that's got a big off and a little on.
Save your fingers.
Well, you never know. You know, something happens, you know, a little piece of off cut falls down in between the blade and, you know, in the little gap in your insert plate. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of rattling around in there. And, you know, hopefully you're wearing your safety glasses and everything like you should. You can hit that off switch, you know, and maybe you're still, you know, doing something with your hands and you can't do it. So that's nice to have. Or at least if you're trying to find the off switch, you know, you don't have to hunt around for a tiny, tiny little thing. So a big off switch is not a bad thing. And I really like it. I actually have two of them on there because I have another thing that we'll talk about in addition to the saw that's combined with it.
All right. What's the difference between tail extensions and fences? I don't understand.
Tail extensions?
Table extensions.
Oh, table extensions. So those are, it's either a table extension or a wing. So you have your cast iron top for your table saw. And that's kind of like the business piece. That's the flat, like the machined flat surface that's flat and true that you want that blade perfectly, whatever angle, 90 degrees or whatever from.
Okay.
And then you have, typically it'll be either metal or formica or something on the outside. So, because you don't want a huge chunk of cast iron necessarily because it just adds weight to the whole thing. I mean, more industrial, like bigger and more industrial sized table saws will have more cast iron that's been machined flat, but it's more surface to rust and care for and everything like that. So, and if you're doing any working in a smaller shop, you may not want all of that. So you can have formica or metal wings on it that extend the surface. So if you're doing like sheet goods or something, you have all that surface area to go across. And then if it's really long, you can get legs to help support it so it doesn't droop.
Okay.
But it just gives you more side-to-side room from the blade.
Huh. All right. And that's different from a fence?
Yes, the fence is the guide that moves back and forth.
Oh, okay.
Closer or away from the blade. And that's kind of how you set whatever your cut measurement's going
to
be.
Perfect. All right. On to the next, elevation and tilt wheels.
So mine are plastic and they're breaking.
Plastic does do that.
So,
but the cast iron part's just perfect.
Yeah. So I do have replacements I got to install, but I'm going to have to do some finagling of the metal bits that they interface with. So pretty self-explanatory. Elevations, how much blade protrudes out of the top of the table saw. And then your tilt is exactly what it sounds like. That's how much the blade tilts. Typically only in one direction, usually to a maximum of about 45 degrees.
All right.
And metal is better. Again, newer table saws have just overall, well, depending on what you get, I'm sure you could buy a cheap one that has some pretty awful parts on it in plastic, stuff that can break down in time. But if you buy a decent one, you're going to get metal handles, and hopefully that should last you a long time.
All right. How have you upgraded your dust collection? I very much approve of dust collection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the combination cabinets or hybrids. I'm not sure exactly how they're termed. I've heard both. Don't have great dust evacuation on them.
It's fun funny.
I mean, the whole thing's basically like a sieve. Like, not only do you have the hole in the insert at the top of the table, where the cabinet meets the bottom of the cast iron top is just open all the way around, yes, every side. Then you have the slots where the elevation and angle adjustment screws and everything go through the cabinet. Those are wide open. Then there's a vent on the other side for the motor. And then the entire bottom, and, you know, maybe you've got like, you know, about 10 to 12 inches of panel all the way around where the motor is housed. And then below that's completely open. And at one point, my dad, when he had the saw, he made some plexiglass panels for the underside, front and back, because the sides are covered, but the front and back are open.
Yes.
Beneath that 12-inch wraparound panel that kind of protects the business end of the table saw. And that would slowly fill up with sawdust, and it would make this cool kind of like sand glass with like layered different colors from all the different woods and stuff that are being used. Maybe a little layer of plexiglass, and we were cutting plexiglass on it or something. So that was interesting, but I have since decided that I want it to be more efficient. And I have a dust extractor, which has got a very high CFM, so I can pull all that stuff out while I'm cutting. And what I've done with it is I ended up getting a piece of very thin plywood and routed it to be exactly the outline of the bottom of that 12-inch sheet metal wraparound that houses the top of the saw just beneath the cast iron top. So that bottom part is sealed, and then I have like a plastic dust collection funnel to, I think it's a 6-inch connector, and then that gets connected with a hose that goes straight to the dust extractor. Above that, I've used magnet sheets to cover vents and all of the different holes and stuff on the outside. And then I flipped the entire saw. I disassembled it, flipped the entire saw over, and filled the gaps around the panel body and the cast iron tabletop with expanding foam. Mm. And then carved out what I didn't need after it was done doing its thing. And then I made a zero clearance insert for the top. So now you can really, really feel that airflow coming through the top of it when you're cutting something. So, but, you know, if you are getting a new saw, you can think about that. Like, there are going to be some things, but certainly, depending on what your budget is and what you're going for, you can expect to have better options for dust collection, certainly, with some of the newer saws, because they put more thought and effort into it, I think.
It's good that those things get upgraded occasionally. So do you have a saw stop, or is that just on newer models?
Saw stop is a company that have a proprietary system that will save your fingers.
I appreciate that.
In a moment of mental lapse.
Oh, is that the hot dog video you made me watch?
Yeah, that's the hot dog saw.
Freakish.
I very much want a saw stop. They have some very nice features and everything. There are definitely some things that would change about it if I got one. But I do like the idea of having that, because I would say that my tool safety around the table saw is very good, having been like properly taught on how to utilize a saw without losing important bits of yourself.
Train your children.
Yeah. So I still have all of my fingers, and they're very unforgiving, and like, it's actually missing some face safety features. My Delta, we'll talk about that when we get to them. And but I do like the saw stop. It is proprietary, so nobody else, no other manufacturer is going to have this. But it's the one that has the little explosive charge and a aluminum block that buries itself into the blade in like a tenth of a second and stops the blade. So instead of you losing, a hand, you'll walk away with like a nick.
Very good.
Don't set them off by accident. They're $100 a pop.
Yeah. But hey, it's cheaper than trying to sew your finger back on.
But I don't imagine anytime soon they're going to let their patents lapse. So the only way you're going to get a hold of it. Now, the nice thing is about it, from everything that I've heard, is SawStop, does make an excellent saw. So it's not like they got this whiz bang thing. Yeah, you got this whiz bang thing in the middle of it that's going to save your fingers, but the rest of it is you know.
It's the you hope you never ever use it.
Yeah, but that's what I'm talking about is that's cool, but the rest of the saw is also very good.
Okay.
So it's not like that's the only bit that's nice that you get. Like the whole thing is well thought out, well designed, and that kind of thing. But it's, you know, when you already have a table saw, it's hard to justify replacing it necessarily. And there also are parts of my particular saw that I really love that I would probably want to change about the saw stop that if I got it, I might do.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. What is a riving knife?
A riving knife is a little curved piece of metal that is attached to the whole motor assembly where the blade is, and it sits directly behind the blade. What it's designed to do is if you have any movement in wood, if you're releasing any tension in the wood as you cut it, you know, it wants to pinch together or it wants to twist or something like that, that riving knife will keep it from pinching and stalling the back of the blade. Huh. Or also what it does is it prevents excessive burning, because you could have a perfectly clean blade, but if that wood as you cut it is wanting to pinch against the back of the blade as it rotates up out of the saw bed, then you're going to get all of that burning on the backside because the wood just wants to clamp onto it. I've had it so bad it actually stalled the saw blade and stopped it. And I had to periodically drive wooden wedges because I don't have a riving knife on mine because it's an old saw.
Ah.
And so I had to go through and drive wooden wedges into the cut as I made it.
Oh, wow. Fascinating. So you were talking about wheels earlier and needing metal ones. Are there additional special wheels or...
Oh, that's like...
Wheels!
Wheels!
It's in capital letters on my list.
Putting wheels on the bottom of your saw so you can...
I feel like I'm going to be conscripted soon.
Conscripted?
I get conscripted to help with shop projects.
Oh, what? Like putting some wheels on stuff?
Uh-huh.
When did we put wheels on stuff?
Oh, we haven't, but I get conscripted.
I like putting wheels on stuff. I like two things in my shop: magnets and wheels.
He does love magnets.
All right, so
I help move the heavy stuff.
I have wheels on a lot of things. That's mostly because the last shop that I had we had to fit two cars in, so everything had to move when it was time to put it away, including my workbench. So, putting wheels in the base of the saw so you can move it. Because if you're getting an actual cabinet saw, it's fairly heavy. And you can get kick casters, which have a little lever on them. So you can push down a lever and the wheels pop or press down and lift the tool. And then it has stationary ones. So it kind of leans it back just enough so all the wheels engage. But then you can move it around and reposition it if you need to, which is really handy, especially in a small shop where you don't have so much room that everything could just permanently live where it is. Which is most of us as far as hobbyist woodworkers. And you never know. That could be a project where I'm working with a lot of sheet goods and I need to move it over here just enough that I can actually, you know, utilize it in this way or something like that. Or, you know, whatever, just giving you some flexibility in the shop versus, you know, it has to be here. some companies, I know SawStop is one of them, includes an upgrade package where it's actually integrated.
Ooh.
Into it, so it has a little kick thing on the bottom, which is cool. So you press that down, and it pops up the wheels, and you can move it around however you like.
Average.
Yeah, that's a really cool thing to have for any of your machines, I think. Depending on what it is, certainly the things in the center of my shop space are on wheels, and that's the way I like it, because then if I need more assembly area room, I can move them to one side.
Very handy. All right. You like your jigs.
Oh, there's so many jigs.
So many jigs. And what is a microjig ripper spreader?
So you can get these little things. So if you don't have a riving knife, these are an alternative. And microjig is one maker that makes the ripper spreader.
Oh, it's a brand.
It's a brand. Yeah, microjig. Which, you know, is the same manufacturer. We're not sponsored by them, but we'd happy to talk to them about it. they make the blade cleaner. I have a whole bunch of their stuff. They make really, really good stuff. And they put a lot of thought into them. And they're like very good stuff. So I have one of these. I haven't installed it yet. But essentially, if you don't have a riving knife, you can put it behind it. And it's the same thing. If you have wood that's trying to pinch as you cut it, it'll keep it apart so you don't have to go and drive wedges into it. So it's just a way you can do it. It's a little tricky to install, but it is something you can purchase if you have an older saw that doesn't have a riving knife. Or if you're just having issues with whatever you're cutting and you really want it to completely stay separate after you've cut it. So it's kind of like an after-the-fact add-on riving knife. But okay. It's further behind.
No, I misunderstood. I thought micro jig was a really tiny.
Oh, we're gonna jig. Get into jigs. There are, a ton.
I didn't realize it was a brand, and I thought it was a very small one.
it's a micro brand, micro jig.
All right, blade guards and protective covers. I'm in favor of these.
Yeah, so I don't have one of these. The saw originally did come with one. I don't think it was transparent, which is a problem if you're trying to... I mean, you can flip it back and do your measurements and
Where
everything.
Where is the blade? Where will it come down? I don't know.
So essentially all it is a kind of a wedge-shaped hood that protects you. Like if you were going to fall face first into the blade, you'd hit that thing first. Or if you're going to come in from the side, if you're just being careless. Mm-hmm. I think something broke on my particular saw, so I just ended up removing the entire thing. I haven't had any issues with it, and I kind of like seeing the blade. I would not advise doing that. If you have a blade guard or protective cover, typically now they're better made. They're transparent, so you can actually see where the blade is. You can flip them back, do your measurements from the blade and everything before you do your cut and set up your cut, then flip it back down. And they have integrated dust extraction.
Brilliant.
If you imagine as you're cutting something, not all of the sawdust that gets caught in the little grooves between the teeth of your saw blade is going to get flung down.
Right.
Some of it's going to catch a ride all the way up back and around, and it's going to get flung right at your face. That's why you wear safety glasses when you're cutting, because you're going to get little splinters and bits of sawdust flung back at you, because essentially it's a big water wheel and it's spinning towards you the whole time.
Pleasant.
Yeah. So that's what it's really designed to do, is to prevent you from accidentally slamming your hand down on top of it or something you don't want cut or from the side. And then also it has a dust extraction element to it as well. So if you have one, use it. Now, there are some cases where you have to remove it. So if you're using certain types of jigs, you will have to remove it. So if you're using a crosscut sled, you can't use it. If you're using a spline jig, you can't use it. So, but if you're just using the table saw and the fence and that's it, use it. It's there for a reason. It's there to keep you safe. It's there to keep your eyeballs safe. I do wish I had one. It's something broke and I just don't have it anymore. So, but hopefully one of these days I'll be able to upgrade, and then I'll have a fancy saw stop with a dust extracting safety hood. So we'll go up one, because you skipped one right here. The miter gauge.
Yeah, it happens.
So miter gauges, typically your saw will come with a miter gauge. Which is the little T-shaped thing that rides in your miter slot. Imagine that. So you can do a whole bunch of things. Typically, the miter gauges come, they'll have some screws in them, so you could put like a board in front of it as like a sacrifice to extend that, because they're typically pretty small. For me, I have a super fancy Incra miter gauge. And typically the ones that come with your table saw are kind of not so great. I've heard mixed reviews on different brands as far as whether or not they're worth keeping. But that's basically, if you're doing any kind of cross-cutting and you're not doing a full-on cross-cutting sled, a miter gauge is what helps you make 90-degree cuts off the a longer board.
All right. On to the next, a blade break. Is that exactly what it sounds like?
So not to be confused with the saw stop technology, some of them will actually include a brake. So when you turn the saw off, mine does not have one. So you turn it off and it's like, whoa.
of the slice.
I have to make another cut, and like I'm trying to be safe and wait for the blade to stop completely before I start again. But
it's
this
the
is,
only thing it does.
It's taking forever, though.
It wants attention.
So newer saws will actually have a saw break where they use the motor or something else to stop the blade faster, so you can get back to measuring from the blade or whatever you have to do in setting up and pulling parts off and working around the blade safely. So that's kind of a nice feature I'd like to have at some point, just having that blade stop moving faster so I can get to the next step.
Right. Okay. I know we've talked about this before, going over safety in the shop. I know you have push sticks and have used them. Push sticks, push blocks, along with all of your jigs.
Yes. Push sticks are great.
Jigs and micro jigs and...
Well,
so many jigs.
Yeah, you as far as push sticks or push blocks. So push sticks are what they sound like. It's a stick, and it's got usually like a kind of bird's mouth in the front of it, so you can grab onto corners and put pressure on stuff. Or you've seen the one that kind of looks more like a hand plane, the way the handle is situated, and it's got a little notch on the backs for pushing things through. And you can make your own. They don't have to be fancy. I mean... I've cut out some fancier ones, and I'll probably make some even fancier ones at some point. But really, they can just be a piece of scrap wood. They don't have to be anything fancy. And then you can get things like Microjig makes push blocks, which are really great. They have like grippy, rubbery stuff on the bottom.
Ooh.
Oh, and if you're looking at push blocks, I would stay away. I would tend to shy away from the ones with foam on the bottom. They don't grip as well, and they come apart so much faster. The kind of knobbly, rubber, you know, grippy parts on the bottom of the micro jigs, that has lasted, and it still stays grippy, and it doesn't slip like nearly as much, if at all. I mean, you still, if it gathers up a lot of sawdust, it can start to slip more just because, you know, your friction's slowing down. But just, you know, brush them off and clean them. And they're like very adjustable, so you can change where your pressures and everything like that, especially if you have something where you're cutting some thinner things, so your hand has to kind of move over the blade. Those are really nice because your hand is up and away entirely from the blade.
Excellent.
As you put pressure down and push the stuff through. And it also helps to prevent kickback. If you're cutting thinner strip things, and you're not thinner but not super thin, you know, I would say if you get down below like 2 inches between the blade and the fence, you really have to start watching kickback, because the blade is going to want to grab that piece and send it back at you the moment it comes free.
Yeah.
But if you have something that's grippier, a push stick or something, that's no problem, because you can just continue pushing it through and it should go fine.
Right.
So, yeah, push sticks and stuff, like, go get nice ones, you know. Whatever you're going to actually use, if you get something cheap and you hate it and you're not going to use it, it's pointless.
Yep.
Get the one you're going to use.
For sure. All right. Thin rip jigs and angle thin rip jigs.
Yes. So the thin rip jig is for straight pieces. And this is where you're getting down to stuff that's so thin, you can't even get a push stick in between. If you're going to actually, the piece that you want is going to be between the blade and the fence, and you're cutting like 1/8 of an inch bits off, stop. Like in most cases, and then like, unless you have a zero clearance insert, it's not even going to go all the way through the saw. As soon as you cut it, it's going to just drop down and get sucked into your dust extractor.
Oh,
that, and it's super dangerous, because your push sticks, your blade's super close to the fence, you're going to get kickback, or you're going to lose the bit, or you're going to be tempted to reach in to get it when it goes.
Oh yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that. So what they make is a thin rip jig, which actually what you do is you move the majority of your material to the other side of the saw blade. So now that all that material is mostly between the fence and the blade, and the piece that you want is coming off, well, let's say your fence is on the right side. The piece that you want is coming off the left side of the blade.
Okay.
So what the thin rip jig does is it sets a distance. So it's got a little bearing in it. And so you move the workpiece up till it's touching the bearing. And so the fence is up against the other side of the workpiece that you're cutting from.
Huh.
You lock down your fence and you run it through. That way you get a consistent width between the left side of the saw blade and the thin rip jig. And now there's nothing in between. It's not like it's in between the fence and the blade anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's off to one side. You peel it off. You can use a push stick to just kind of push that the bit that you want off to the side, reset, push it through again. Typically, you're making a lot of these because you're doing something like inlay or something like that.
Right.
Where you need lots of thin bits. And that's indispensable as far as the safety thing goes. It's just a pain in the butt to try and do it any other way.
Makes sense. And the next jig is the angle thin rip jig.
All the jigs. So you can do this in a couple different ways. You can do a poor man's version. This is for like doing table legs with a very narrow taper all the way up them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's notoriously a really difficult cut to make without something like this. So if you wanted to do like a long taper on a table leg or something like that, you can purchase one, or you can do a poor man's version where you can just use carpenter's tape and a straight board and essentially make your own sled for it.
Okay.
And then you kind of like mark out some angles on it and do it that way. You know, it just depends. Do you want to spend the effort on making your own jig in any case when you're making a jig, or do you want to just purchase it and then, you know, make that work for you? All right, let's just do the jigs. What other jigs do we have?
Well, the angle thin rip. So I
the angle thin rip is the same thing. So if you're cutting long, like very narrow angles, that's what that's for.
Fair. The spline jig.
Yes. So you've seen this probably. Typically, it's on like boxes and picture frames, where you'll have a contrasting wood going through the corner at a 45 degree angle. So you've seen it. And then you could also do dovetail ones.
Oh, I like those.
And all that is it's a, what does it look like? It's a, it's like putting a box on its corner.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like 45, 45. So the jig is just two 45 degree panels. So the box can sit in kind of like teetering on its corner. And then you run that through, and you could either do it through the table saw if you want to do straight splines, and you just take a piece of wood the same thickness, typically an eighth of an inch, because that's your full kerf.
Okay.
And then you glue those in, and you just trim off the excess, and that's your spline. And it strengthens a miter joint, and it looks really nice, too. And then if you're going to do something different, like the dovetail ones, you just need to cut yourself a stick of dovetail-shaped material. And then you slide that in to the groove that you cut. Now, you have to do that on a router table because you're going to need a dovetail
right.
Router bit to cut those. But in either case, you can do that. And it looks really good. And it strengthens the joint.
And that's different from the miter jig for mm-hmm. picture frames, but can accent that.
Yeah, miter jig would be more of a cross-cut sled.
Okay.
But specifically, it has a full setup so that you're doing cuts at a 45 degree angle
mm-hmm.
Flat through the blade. So you think about how a picture frame goes together, those two 45 right. degree angles.
It's got to line up.
Yeah, and it's got to be perfect. So if you, it's really, really hard. Like picture,
don't want it to look like it came from the dollar store.
You know, you got the big gap either on the corner or on the inside. I've seen people even take square rules and they go to an aluminum one. They screw that down just the way they want it, aligned with the blade just right, and actually cut it
okay.
with the table saw, thus making a perfect, you know, 45. So now you can burn through
nice.
Picture frames. It also kind of helps you because sometimes you can get turned around doing miter cuts, which are difficult to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of helps orient because there it is laying flat on the table. What is your future, you know, picture frame? So it kind of makes it a little bit easier because you can cut all of those at the same time.
Brilliant. Hey, the finger joint jig.
So finger joints, just what they sound like if you were to take your hands mm-hmm. with your fingers spread a little bit apart and interlace them together. That's what it's a type of corner joint. So think about like dovetails, but instead of doing dovetails, they're just straight.
What you did on my spice cabinet?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I did dovetails on your spice cabinet.
Right.
But if you're going to do, it's also called a box joint.
Okay.
So basically it's like pieces of each corner and they interlace together on the corners to give you kind of this alternating look to it.
Wow. I love those.
So you can make that. That's easy enough. Essentially, it's a cross-cut sled. So you use your miter slots, the two little slots on your tabletop or on your table saw cast iron top. You can align that and you use that or assemble it or purchase one. And then you can use a small piece of wood, you know, an eighth of an inch if you're doing a full curve kind of thing. And then you'll make your first cut and then you just place the cut that you just made over and make your next cut. And then you put that one over it and then you make the next cut. And you just advance all the way through until you have all your cuts made and they line up perfectly.
Nice. All right. The bridle joint / tenoning jig. Tenoning.
So really, it's kind of like a fence extension because you're going to be doing this in the ends of boards, which is kind of tedious, right? Because if you have a if you have a long board and you're putting it on its end into your table saw and then trying to push it through, that gets tricky. So what you can do is you can have a setup where it kind of uses your fence to stabilize that by having a backer that slides back and forth along your table saw fence. And then what you can do is you can take that board. Essentially, what you're trying to do is a big box joint or finger joint, but with only like three fingers, like one in one side and two in the other side. That's an easy way of thinking about it. But just trying to cut that into the end of a board is problematic and difficult and potentially dangerous. So, but if you have this little backer thing that slides back and forth, you can clamp the board to that and then use that whole thing nice and stable now to run that through until you have your bridle joint or tenon essentially cut.
Very cool. All right. I'm not sure all of these words go well together, but what is a feather sticks hedgehog?
Oh, so
are we getting new pets?
We are, in that case, we already have a hedgehog.
Oh.
So a hedgehog is a type of feather stick. So you can make your own feather stick by cutting multiple 45 degree cuts really close to each other in a board. And what it's designed to do is it clamps into your miter slot. And if you're cutting something and you want it to stay steady against or consistently against the fence, you don't want it to wobble back and forth where you're making a cut, a board. What that does is an extra hand that puts pressure on the board from the side to keep it pressed up against the fence as it goes through the cut. So those little fingers, because they're real thin, they stay flexible. So you can give it a little bit of. So the hedgehog is really cool because basically it's like a seashell, like a spiral with all these little fingers on it, the hedgehog.
And so
when you put it in the miter slot, you just turn it until it makes contact with the wood and you tighten it down. And then they even make an extension. So if you have a taller board that needs pressure, you can actually stack a couple of them together and use that. So that's what I have. I really like it. So
nice. Very cool. You've mentioned the crosscut sled a few times.
Yes. I think the crosscut sled is the king of all jigs when it comes to table saws.
I didn't realize it was a jig.
It is and it isn't, because you can purchase it or you can make your own. And then essentially, I would say many of the other jigs are just jigs on top of a crosscut sled. So your, you know, with the exception of maybe the thin rip jig, you can cut angles on it by just taping down your board at an angle with the crosscut crosscut sled. You could, you know, make the little V thing and and make it a spline jig, you know, type of thing. So it's really nice when you're doing cross cuts instead of rip cuts. Rip being down the length of the board and cross cuts being making the board shorter.
Right.
So when you're making the board shorter and being precise about it, especially if you have a board that's too long to fit between the fence and the blade, right? Because you got to mark it and cut the little bit off and you know, and keep the longer bit. So there's all kinds of things you can do on them. You can mark them up. You can cut angles on them and everything like that. I typically like to make, you know, my own, because then if I cut it up, who cares? You know, I do have a combination miter gauge and crosscut sled by Incra.
Very nice.
Which is fantastic. And I've made all kinds of extra stuff. You know, it's got like a swing down adjustable stop and all kinds of goodies on it.
Yeah, I try not to touch it.
But, you know, that's it's more pricey. You could make your own. I mean, that's all extruded aluminum and stuff like that. But it's a cool combination tool. I do like it a lot and use the hell out of it.
All right. The most important component of the table saw, the saw blade.
Yeah, of course. I'm a big fan of Ridge Carbide. It's an American company, and they make some excellent blades. What turned me on to them is for the, I don't know why it took me so long, but I heard about the flat top box joint blade. This is a while ago now. and I was getting more into, this is before I built your spice cabinet, because I wanted to make those grooves so I could fit all the little bits in together and make all those tiny little, you know.
It's the best spice rack in
cubbies
the world.
And stuff like that. And most saw blades, the teeth are offset and they alternate. So when you make a cut, it leaves a little ridge down the bottom of the cut. Hmm. Well, if you're sliding a board into that, you're trying to actually use that to make little grooves to slide other boards into. It doesn't work so well. So what it ends up doing is like every fifth tooth is flat. So it will dig out that little ridge so that you can use that to make it a joint. And specifically for making boxes and things like that, you need that cut to be flat. So they make a wide variety of both full kerf and thin kerf blades. Thin kerf being, let me back up there. So full kerf is an eighth of an inch, and thin kerf is 3/32. The nice thing about thin kerf is if you're trying to save on material, or if you're trying to actually get through the material without slowing your blade because it's lower horsepower or something like that, it takes less effort to get through when you're not cutting so much out.
Right.
So they make both varieties. They also have dado stack sets and stuff like that. And you can send them out to be sharpened, and they'll laser engrave your name into the blade so that they know it's yours. And the one thing I'll say about Ridge Carbide is, one, it's an American company. Two, when you get the blades, the amount of carbide in the teeth, like, they're chunky.
Nice.
Which is really nice, because a lot of times the other stuff is real thin. And I have had other blade manufacturers, the welds break, and actual carbide teeth come off.
Well, that's no good.
Yeah. Wear eye protection when the carbide starts flying, that's for sure. Granted, it was a cheaper blade, and I was using and abusing it and probably cutting nails and that I didn't know about, and some junk boards and this and that. But you know, it seems like they're just better made. And I do like buying American made.
Definitely. All right. Angle finders.
Yeah. So if you're cutting very specific angles, that is tilting the blade from 90 degrees, you're going to want to know what angle it's at. So I have both a regular one and a digital one, and I really like the digital one because you'll put it on the top of your table saw, and it's magnetic, and zero it, and then you can snap it to your blade, and it'll tell you digitally, even as you move it, exactly what the angle is. Some people say that, like, oh, they're not that accurate and everything, and I've taken then a 45 degree angle machinist angle finder, or machinist, not square. It wouldn't be square, but it says machinist square at 45 degrees, and put it up against it, and it's perfect. I see no light coming through, you know, and it's like, okay, that's obviously accurate. So accurate enough for my work at this time.
Excellent.
Speaking of machinist squares are a really good thing, because if you're trying to reset the blade back to 90, they're designed to be extremely accurate. And you can easily reset it without using an angle guide. And all you're looking for is that there's no light, there's no gap that you can see light through as you have that held against the cast iron tabletop. And that's important too. Don't hold it against your insert, because the insert could be off a little bit. You're going off of the cast iron top when you're measuring 90 against that blade to make sure it's dead on.
Good, good. All right, the outfeed table.
Yeah, this is particularly useful if you're cutting long boards or sheet goods.
To catch the end.
Yeah, and you can get away with a folding table or sawhorses. Just set a little bit below the height of your tabletop. You can get a helper to catch boards if you need to. But then if you really want, you know, if you're doing a lot of it, and you can build yourself an outfield table, and a lot of times they'll do like a veneered top because it'll be a little bit slicker, and it'll just be easier to move stuff across and just slightly lower than the top of your saw, or at least equal with it. But I like a little bit slightly lower, that way there's nothing to hang up on as you're pushing stuff across the saw. But it's just nice because then you don't need to have anyone there to help you catch anything that you're cutting.
All right. And lastly, the router table wing.
Yeah. So this is, I'm sure this will be controversial a little bit. So it is, I have a Formica wing on my table saw. That's
they still make Formica?
Well, it's laminate.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a laminated press wood that has a inset cut out of it where I have a router lift, and that's my router table.
Okay.
And what I do with it is I use the same, so I have an Incra, what is it called? Incra LS, no, TSLS system, and it's awesome. I love this fence. I need to talk about this fence for a second. Upgrading your fence is awesome. Like leaving the tap, tap, tap until it's like right where you want it. Oh gosh, it's so freeing. I love it. Because this thing has a screw in it. I think it's accurate to a 32nd of an inch. And then it has a micro adjust that's like a thousandth of an inch or something ridiculous. The little wheel and everything. And it's once you have it locked in, it's got all these little rulers on it that you can use for reference that are super, super accurate. And literally, you can snap it back in exactly to like the 64th of an inch if you need to on a measurement. And then move it, you know, so many inches, and then right back to where it was, and it'll be dead on, and no tapping back and forth or anything. And it comes with all these wonderful upgrades and stuff. And some of the upgrades I got, the router lift I have is an Incra, and then I had a whole router table system. So you can purchase a separate router table system that has the same kind of fence style and everything. If you're doing a separate dedicated router table, which would be really, really nice, but I'm a little short on space. So this is a big space saver for me to have the router lift or the router table combined with my table saw. Now, what it means is I have to retract the table saw blade completely, and I have to loosen up some things and kind of move the fence across because it's on the other side of the blade. And then the fence becomes the fence for the router table. So if I'm doing something, it's got all this adjustment and extra features and stuff like that. So that's kind of the, I don't know, you could say that's the controversy, but it ends up being on the end of my table saw because a lot of times you're running things from left to right across your router table. So to have it on the other side and trying to run things through it would be really problematic. A lot of times I'll just use like the little starter peg, and I don't use the fence at all because I'm just running it across like a template or something, just like with a flush cut bit.
Gotcha.
But that has been huge. And then I think I bought the wing in a specific width with the cutout already in it for the lift.
Okay.
So like that's getting into router stuff, but it's kind of cool that you can combine that into your table saw. Yes, it is a little bit extra work. You have to kind of transform the thing into your router table versus like leaving that all set up because I do have to remove some pieces and move some stuff around, and it does take a minute. But, you know, it saves me, you know,
a lot of space.
A whole table.
Yeah.
You know, with a dedicated tool kind of thing.
Multi-use tools are awesome.
Mm-hmm. So that is possible. You can do that. I don't know. I really like it. I've had, and it's nice having the cast iron top there. Because I'll use that a lot as a reference to make sure that I'm completely flat and everything's aligned correctly. So that's really good.
Definitely.
All right. I think we'll do it for this episode.
Uh-huh.
We thank you very much for listening and tuning in again for our 14th episode, Still Going Strong.
Woo!
You can find us at our website, wilsonscall.com. And you can also find us on Patreon. We'll leave some links and some breadcrumbs around. I've been working on the website, so we'll have some updates there hopefully soon for you to enjoy.
Good.
And thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time.